How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. We're into the final stretches of Dairy Week here on AgriTalk. And yeah, we're bringing in Faber to cover some of the dairy and policy issues. But come on, the president and the first lady have a confirmed case of COVID-19. Of course, that's where the conversation is going to start this morning.
Live from a frosty Friday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all! Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Pam Johnson, and Sean Haney, and live in the mix, Dwayne Faber. Right after the news, Jennifer Shike from Farm Journal Spork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Davis Michelson, thank you so much, brother. How are you today?
I am fired up. You know, I skipped breakfast.
Yes.
And actually, I skipped supper last night, so I just had ice cream instead. You know, at some point, it's like, you know, it's too late to eat real food. Let's just eat ice cream. But
okay.
I had a stuffed baked potato and a stuffed pork chop all ready to go for supper last night.
Yeah.
I've already got it in the oven now. It's in the oven right now. I'm skipping straight to lunch after this.
Well, yeah, I was inspired by Tom Vilsack earlier this week when he was talking about a pizza carrying 2 pounds of cheese.
Yes, sir. That's a lot of cheese.
That's a lot of cheese. So we had the homemade pizzas last night. Did not go with the full 2 pounds, but it was plenty cheesy.
I saw the pictures.
Cheesy.
They looked delicious. Delicious, yeah, amigo.
Yeah.
Good work.
Yes, they were. So here we are. We've got... fresh news overnight. And the thing is, I think I was still awake and up doing some things when the news probably broke early a.m. and I just didn't see it. I woke up this morning and it was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
What else could be more 2020 than maybe the most protected guy coming down with a case of COVID-19? It carries a lot of implications. The markets have responded negatively to it this morning. The equities have bounced off of the lows, but nonetheless, there's been a lot of conversation on the business networks this morning about the amount of uncertainty that throws into the mix. Yesterday, we had Mike North on that was talking about a series of black swans that we've already had this year. Well, is this another one? Or is this one of those cinnamon swans that you and I talked about yesterday?
Swan.
Love it. All right, man. We've got a lot to cover on the free-for-all today. We're going to get to it. But first, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, not to beat a dead horse, but in case you don't watch the news, President Trump and the First Lady reportedly tested positive for COVID-19 and have been quarantined in the White House. This after a top advisor traveling with the president earlier this week tested positive. A White House physician said the president and First Lady are, quote, well. The vice president and his wife have tested negative. Now, should Trump's condition worsen and require hospitalization or he becomes incapacitated, he could invoke the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, handing the reins of power over to Vice President Mike Pence until the president recovers, at which time, apparently, the vice president would turn power back over to the president and we resume the insanity. Yeah.
That's how it works. Yes. Yeah. Barron has tested negative.
That's good.
Yeah, other members of the Trump family have tested negative. It appears that in the Trump family, it is confined to the president and the first lady.
Okay. Well, U.S. jobs growth is expected to slow to below 1 million for the first time since the economic recovery began. The unemployment rate, however, is expected to slide 0.2% to 8.2%. The easing pace of jobs growth still reflects that millions remain unemployed and the overall pace of the recovery that has slowed based on other economic indicators like consumer spending and other activity. The labor force participation rate is expected to remain subdued, and attention will also be on revisions to prior data, Chip.
Yeah, 12.6%. It wasn't great news. Job growth did slow to under a million. 660 some thousand on that. It was viewed as a slightly disappointing report this morning when it was released. I think that probably had something to do with the pressure that we saw on the stocks as well. Now, Larry Kudlow was on, though, of course, this morning, and his message was, it's not as bad. It's not as bad as what it appears to be, of course.
Oh, well, there you go. The House has passed their $2.2 trillion COVID stimulus package, but the measure is expected to go no farther. House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson, who voted against the relief bill, said, quote, this is going nowhere. This is just a vote to make people feel good. I want to help people. That means sitting at the table and getting a
radio edit
deal done. Representative Kay Granger from Texas noted the bill is too costly and contains too many provisions that have little to do with the pandemic. Indeed, those include measures enabling undocumented immigrants to receive tax rebates, delays in the 2020 census, and sweeping changes to how elections are conducted.
Yeah,
some little too
many positioning issues, I guess, is what I would call it in this latest package from the House. We'll get Jim's take on it here in just a bit.
Well, across Iowa, the nation's largest hog-producing state, losses have piled up for farmers and processors. What initially looked like a prosperous year rapidly became the industry's worst financial disaster ever, according to the National Pork Producers Council. Quickly, China's ambassador to the United States said in comments on China's National Day that the U.S. is fomenting a Cold War with China. And finally, the Irish Supreme Court ruled on Thursday that the bread used by the popular fast food sandwich chain Subway can no longer legally be classified as bread due to its high sugar content, saying it is closer to a, quote, confectionery or fancy baked good. I always feel fancy when I'm eating Subway. Yeah, I guess this is why.
I guess.
Fancy baked good. Like, wow.
The amount of sugar in that bread is like six times what they consider necessary. So, all right, Davis. Hey, stay tuned for this one because I know you're going to want to hear this. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. Monster wild pigs in Canada, Jennifer. What is going on?
What?
Well, you know, it makes sense, right? I enjoyed listening to a presentation from Dr. Ryan Brook, and he was explaining how Bergman's Law says as you go further north, typically for wild species, they get bigger just so they can survive. So his team has been tracking the wild pig population in Canada and has just discovered, you know, when he first started his research in 2010, the groups were maybe 4 to 7 pigs. And now they're, then they were suddenly 11, and then they were upwards of 4 dozen. So he was just talking about how not only are the pigs getting in bigger groups, but they're also growing bigger. So it used to be a 400-pound wild pig was bragging rights, and he said their team recently captured a 638-pound sow, and one of his students was flying and saw an 800-pounder. And I'm like, an 800-pound wild pig, so getting big up there.
They are certainly getting big. What about numbers? You talked about the groups are getting bigger, but the population itself, is it expanding quickly?
Yes, it is. And he said that's what, you know, that's what pigs do. They expand. They, you know, they get more and more. And if you look at other countries and places where there are crazy numbers, you know, it's to be expected. But the challenge is it's getting closer and closer to our border.
That's exactly right. Something we got to watch. Jennifer, I got to cut you off. We got to go. We got a free-for-all coming up next on AgriTalk.
This special edition of AgriTalk is celebrating Dairy Week, paying tribute to America's dedicated dairy farmers and celebrating the dairy industry. Check out dairyherd.com/dairyweek for free access to our virtual content, sponsor showcase, and more exclusive resources. Dairy Week is presented by Elanco Animal Health and coverage brought to you by additional support from Aspen Veterinary Resources and Cargill Animal Nutrition.
From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
You need harvest results, not another radio ad. So let's get to the point. Channel Seedsmen place products to perform in your fields, and the results can speak for themselves. Get yield results from your area and less yapping at channel.com/yield. Huh. I guess less talking means more time for music. Classic rock, anyone?
That's channel.com/yield for local harvest results.
Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Show how you farm on by purchasing name-brand merchandise from Farm Journal and Cowpokes Work at Western. Visit cowpokesonline.com right now, and $2 of every item purchased will be donated to 4-H.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and a free-for-all. I'm your host, Chip Flory. This is going to be a pile of fun today. Let's bring in Pro Farmers Jim Wiesmeyer first. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning, Chip.
COVID-free?
There's late talk of it. The odds are still a big hurdle, but they really want to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm talking about you personally, Jim. You're still COVID free.
I don't understand.
You don't have the virus yet is all I'm getting at.
No. My doctor tells me do not leave my house whenever possible and don't fly. I've lived by that. Yes.
Very good. Very good. Real Agriculture, Sean Haney. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing great this morning, Chip, and I am also COVID-free.
Good, good, good. We got to check all the boxes, make sure that everything's covered there. Pam Johnson, Iowa Farmer, past president of NCGA. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning.
Good, yeah. And we're adding a member of the free-for-all today. Since it's Dairy Week, we got Dwayne Faber, dairy producer up in Washington State. Good morning, Dwayne. How are you?
Doing well, Chip. Thanks for having me on.
Great, great, great. I said that we were going to start with the president's COVID-19 confirmation, but let's get an update from Dwayne about what's going on out on the West Coast. How are things?
Things are better. The wildfires have somewhat abated here in Washington and Oregon. It sounds like there's still some down in California. We are having some smoke here in the Pacific Northwest that just moved in recently. It's much better than it was a couple weeks ago where we were walking around with massive headaches and could hardly see 20, 30 feet down the road. And so it's a marked improvement on that. Underway on corn harvest right now and trying to work through getting corn in the bunk.
Gotcha. Dwayne, what did that do to your cows? Did it affect their performance?
So not that we've noticed, but it certainly can. I mean, the research suggests that it can. I mean, just because it does impact us. I mean, myself personally, I had a massive headache for 3 days, and I was mostly indoors or trying to be indoors or in a vehicle. And so I'm sure it had some impact. We weren't able to see it in the milk tank. But.
Good. Okay. You're putting corn in the bunk. What's the crop look like this year?
It's actually been really good. We had some timely rains through the summer, and we're different country probably than the Midwest, but everything goes into corn silage out here, and we're about 32% dry matter, and we're 27 ton to the acre.
Wow.
And so for us, that's pretty good. So, yeah, we've been happy with some of that, and, we still got to finish out the crop and kind of see what some of the other areas are looking like. But that's been the start, and it's been looking pretty good so far, much better than last year.
Yeah. So, Dwayne, how is the dairy business in Washington State?
Yeah, so Washington State, we're all mostly, probably 98% of the state ships to Dairy Gold, and Dairy Gold, 50% of our product gets exported, and so we're an export company. And that being said, we make a lot of powder and we make a lot of butter, and those markets are somewhat different than the cheese market. And so while things have been good, government buying of cheese for food boxes has created a huge disparity still in the class 3 and the class 4 spread or the PPDs. Yep. And so we have not experienced the same milk prices that some of these other cheese-centric areas like Wisconsin have. So we've been about $3, $4 less. But at the same time, there's some significant CFAT money available. Yeah, the government PPP loans helped, and on the milk check side, we're going to have a decent year still on the milk check side.
Good, good. Okay, you know how this goes, Dwayne. Jump in when you've got something to add to the conversation, which I'm sure that you will. The latest that I've got on, I talked about it with Davis in the news segment. The president is showing mild symptoms of COVID-19. Not sure about the First Lady, Melania, but the rest of the family, it appears, right now is COVID-free. Jim, just more uncertainty in one of the most uncertain times in U.S. history.
Yes, here we go again. But, you know, the president has mild symptoms, Chip. That can mean a lot of things based on what I know about this. And reportedly, he has a small fever and a cough. And so you have to watch oxygen levels. So yeah, That'll be the thing everyone will look out for. What's his current health? Because in many cases, we've seen people of his age who get it have mild symptoms at the beginning and they develop further.
Yeah. Yeah. Pam, how does this change the storyline for you?
I hope that it's a teachable moment. First of all, you know, wishing the president and Melania the best of health to get through this, because we've all known personally people that have had it and some have residual effects, and we hope that that's not the case. However, you know, I'm a nurse. So as Jim said, what does his doctor tell him to do and not to do? And Jim listens. And I hope this is a teachable moment for all of us, is to respect the science, wear masks, stay 6 feet apart, do what the epidemiologists tell you. And I think the sad thing for me to read was not only that the president had it last night, but knowing that Hope Hicks had it and feeling sick himself, he still went and did a fundraiser and exposed another 100 people in New Jersey who are going to have to now quarantine.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, go
ahead, Sean.
Well, I was just going to say that's being reported by Bloomberg, that okay. Story. It raises a lot of questions here. We only have 30 days left in the election, by the way. Yep. And, you know, according to some protocols, I'm not sure what they are exactly in D.C. Jim would know better. But, you know, if there's a 14-day quarantine, that's half the period that is left in the election. So obviously some of his appearances are going to obviously change from some of the rallies that he's been having. Questions about, you know, there was a lot earlier this week. It was all about, you know, well, is there a point to having any more debates? Can there actually be any more debates? And you know, the other question I had this morning was, what does this do to the Senate confirmation if there are, some senators that have to go into quarantine because they were in close proximity to the president? This creates a whole bunch of questions.
Yeah. What I understand is if you've been exposed, you go through the 2-week quarantine. If you've got it, you've got to go 2 negative tests more than 24 hours apart, and then you can get back to normal business. Dwayne, how's the COVID-19 story playing out in what was the original hotspot?
Yeah, we've done a good job of kind of keeping the COVID at bay. Personally, on the farm, I've had one guy that's had it, and then another guy that had 2 family members that had COVID. And so it certainly created some management issues as far as isolating and quarantining. And it sounds like, though, and for us too, I mean, if the fever breaks 3 days after that, we've been told you are able to kind of resume your daily tasks. And so I do think that it wouldn't be a 14-day quarantine. However, given our president's propensity to say too much, it might be good for him to be sitting in a room for a while. I don't know. So,
well, don't forget, there are other leaders like Boris Johnson, Prime Minister in the UK. He had COVID, was quite ill, was on a ventilator for a period of time. Also, Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau's wife, She was sick with COVID. The prime minister never did contract the virus. But President Trump is not the first. Also, the leader in Brazil.
He also had it. So
he's not the first.
Right, right. That is exactly right. And I think Davis did a nice job in the news laying out if, like Jim said, if the symptoms do progressively get worse and he does need to step away from the responsibilities for a period of time, that the presidential powers can be passed to Vice President Pence, and when the president recovers, then they can be passed back to the president. I've got that right, don't I, Jim?
Yes, and this is why Pence should be almost in virtual lockdown, as far as yep. I'm concerned, for protection. I do want to add that the Supreme Court hearings will go on as scheduled. You can always vote by proxy. The House has done it, so I don't see any impact there. I think this is almost the end of the aggressive campaigning that Trump likes to do. I don't see the Miami October 15th debate, going on.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. We're going to have to take a break here real quick, but then we're going to get back to the conversation. I want everybody's take on the presidential debate. We'll go through that quickly. And let's do a little preview of the VP debate as well. That's coming up next on the Free For All here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Rumensin. Rumensin's quality, consistency, and efficiency make it the right choice for your dairy operation. Rumensin, trusted by generations. Rumensin is a trademark of Elanco or its affiliates.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, just kind of quiet going into the weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, the markets are dealing with a new dynamic with President Trump testing positive for COVID. Yep. And we saw a little bit of risk aversion overnight through the overnight hours. We're seeing some of it in some of the outside markets, although it's not heavy. And holding up relatively well here, and corn's just trading fractionally lower. Soybeans trading to the upside. We did have daily sales to both China and unknown destinations this morning, so that's given us some price support there. And the wheat market has turned around and trading a little bit to the upside as well.
Boy, it's been an active week in these grains. You think that continues?
Well, the activity came because of USDA shocker, especially on September 1 corn stocks and the revision to June 1 corn stocks. Really was the shocking one there. Yeah. So, from that perspective, I don't think that we're going to have anything. Maybe next week in Friday's update on the crop production and supply and demand. But some of that's already known because we know there's going to be major changes on the S&D tables because of what happened in the stocks report this week.
Yeah, exactly. All right, take us over to livestock, some pressure in the cattle complex.
Yeah, some of that's probably tied to the stock market, although the stock market's come well off its lows and cattle futures have as well. We did get firmer cash cattle trade again this week, so I think it's just kind of the fact that the futures are out in front of the cash right now, pulling back a little bit. Hog market, it's trading to the upside this morning.
Yeah, got to be some optimism in the air in pork about some potential exports coming along. Thanks, Brian. Have a good weekend. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Yeah, that's probably pretty fitting for today. Thanks for playing that one. Welcome back to the free-for-all here on AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer, Real Agriculture Sean Haney, Iowa farmer Pam Johnson, and special guest for Dairy Week, dairy producer Dwayne Faber. Jim, break down the debate between President Trump, Vice President Biden, if you can.
Well, the best analysis I saw was a focus group interviewer who said one-third of the respondents said Biden won, one-third said Trump won, one-third were just disgusted I'm in the third category.
Yeah, yeah. Your comments the following morning about Americans being the loser of the debate, the American people being the loser of the debate, I thought that was a little bit overblown at first, and then the more I thought about it was, doggone it, that's probably right, because, Dwayne, I don't think this is where anybody wanted to end up in this presidential election with the candidates. I don't know. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I sat down with my family. I've got three daughters, an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And the two of them were mad at the youngest for looking at them. And then they started arguing about somebody wearing somebody's shirt. And quite frankly, that was the most adult conversation in the room that evening. It's a sad state of affairs. It's an embarrassment of American politics. And quite frankly, it's a microcosm of what we're seeing on the streets today, you know, and the arguing that we're seeing on social media. And it's a sad place, and it's an ugly place, and there's not much cognitive about it. And here we're faced with a decision, you know, like a farmer in springtime of planting 280 corn or $7 beans. I mean, it's just ugly either way, right? And
yeah,
for me, at the end of the day, you still have, quite frankly, Joe Biden, you know, he's a figurehead. You don't know who he is. And this is still the party that was pushing the Green New Deal, and the Green New Deal is pretty detrimental to animal agriculture, and that scares the heck out of me. So, yeah, overall, just a sad state of affairs.
All right, Pam?
Yeah, I see it differently. I think for me and for a lot of people, so I'm with Jim, but I'm also in two camps. You know, I was totally horrified. It was not a debate. And I'm in the third that thinks that Biden was the winner. And I know we can agree to disagree on that. But for me, I don't know what the strategists were trying to get Trump to do, but he certainly was not doing anything to bring Americans back together. When, like Dwayne's talking about how divided we are, that it's even come to violence. And I'm been working on some of Biden's policy, and then his rural action plan has a lot of things in there that are positive for farmers. And what do we have to compare it to? It's the last 3.5 years of policy under President Trump. And at least Biden has a plan going forward. The Republicans had no platform at the convention, and I have not seen a rural action plan from Trump.
Well, a lot of the action plan was to fix what he viewed as some less than ideal trade agreements, NAFTA being one of them. We've got USMCA. He wanted to take on China. You can argue that maybe there's been some questionable results in taking on China, but he took them on. There's many of those issues he has gone down. Now, with the renewable fuels and the RFS, my stand on that has been very, very, I think it's been well documented that I'm not at all happy with how the RFS has been handled under the administration. But hopefully we've got assurances through Iowa senators that that has been handled. Sean, what's your take on the debates?
Well, I think it delivered exactly what it promised. Did it, like, in many, many facets? Like, if it went the other way and it was completely cordial and there was point and counterpoint, what would our reaction be? It kind of felt like a wrestling match. It had a predetermined outcome, which absolutely delivered. Now, President Trump has a history in the WWE, right? He hosted WrestleMania 4 and 5. Yeah, Linda McMahon worked for him. She might still be the small business.
He knows the pageantry of it all, doesn't he?
Yeah, he gets it, right? He understands building heat. I think he overplayed his hand. I was just waiting for, at some point, Randy Savage to jump off the top rope. I think both of them really just underperformed, to be honest with you, in terms of what they could have. I thought Biden making the odd comment about Antifa, Trump's lack of comment about white supremacy. I thought Biden's positive was denouncing the Green New Deal, whether we believe him or not, but he said it. And just as I thought that, you know, Biden's like, man, he's being disciplined here, then all of a sudden he tells the president to shut up. So I think it delivered what it promised.
You go back about 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago, and I said on this program something about I'm looking forward to the first presidential debate, if for nothing else, the entertainment value alone. You guys pulled me back on that and said, no, it's way more important than that. That is what I envisioned when I said I'm looking forward to it for the entertainment value. The playbook was not a brand new playbook from either the president or from Vice President Biden. We've been down this path before. I was reminded by a friend to take a look at the Biden-Ryan debate. So I watched that last night. It kind of pulled me into it. And there were very similar tactics used in that debate by President Biden, by Vice President Biden, as showed up in the presidential debate the other night. So it's really kind of I'm not saying that to say I told you so. What else should we expect? I'm saying that just to say, listen, in the first one, I guess maybe we shouldn't have expected anything else. But now with the president having COVID, the first debate, if it turns out being the last debate between the two, that's going to be really, really disappointing. Next up is a VP debate, Jim. What's your early line on it?
Well, it's more important now relative to Trump getting COVID. So I think it's added on importance, Jeff.
Okay. Pam?
Yeah, and I think we can look forward to it as, quote, a debate, right? So I think we as Americans have to ask ourselves, is it a wrestling match we're looking for in a debate? Is it a reality TV show format? Or is it actually which one of those two do you want out negotiating on a world stage or a domestic market on your behalf and sitting down at a table and finding solutions? You know, it's, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think part of the problem is what we expect in our candidates. Why do we vote for certain candidates? I'm hearing this in the Midwest. Is it because your governor is hot? Or because she can shoot a gun? Or does it really have to do with substance? It's very
frustrating. Well, I'd like to think that it's got everything to do with substance in the Midwest. I don't think I've ever cast a vote based on the physical appearance of anyone.
No, Duane, I'm not saying you have, but if you follow along on Ag Twitter, it's very disappointing to me.
Well, Duane, you're a big player on Twitter. I've got a following out there as well. I don't know if I use it to take the temperature of society. Do you?
Not really. I mean, it's become increasingly divisive, and the pendulum just swings further and further each way, right? And it's sad, right? That's just the current state of affairs and where we're at. Yeah, I mean, I'm on the West Coast, and so I see the decision between kind of what's going on the West Coast. And it's not just a West Coast thing. I mean, obviously rioting and Antifa, and we're seeing that in Minneapolis. And there is reason to call for change in policing and all of that, right? And yet at the same time, it certainly feels like the hardcore is pushing the narrative a little bit on the Democrat side. And to me, that's unfortunate. And yeah, we see it out here, and I have a hard time getting behind that too. So.
Right. Right. Okay. Let's move on. The next round of coronavirus stimulus, Jim, give us a preview of that so that we can pick it up in the next segment.
Well, there's many hurdles, Chip, not only the number, because it cannot be much more than $1.5 trillion, and they're not there yet, but it's also the issues. I do see both sides wanting it, Chip, and that's why they're still continuing to talk.
Okay. Now, I do see, and finally, I've I've got more people asking me the question, why is Mnuchin so involved in the process? Can you give me an answer to that, Jim?
Because he's got the confidence of Nancy Pelosi, and I think that's important, that you have to have camaraderie with your opponent, if you know that's the right word there. And at least they count on him to at least get what the White House wants. He may be overselling what the White House will accept, Chip, but at least he's got an open door to Pelosi's phone in office.
Yeah, but it does feel like he is having some success and is pulling the two sides together. Or is that?
Yes, and also it's because of the Fed chairman, Powell. Yeah. He is almost begging both political parties to get more fiscal stimulus.
We're going to wrap up the free-for-all when we come back in just a moment. This is AgriTalk.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
And welcome back to the free-for-all on this Dairy Week edition of the free-for-all. We've got Dwayne Faber from Washington State joining in with us. We've got Sean Haney and Jim Wiesmeyer and, of course, Pam Johnson. Pam, you just made a comment during the break about your corn crop. What's going on there?
Yeah, early start to it. And we've been running beans, and they've been really good. But the corn for us is not out there. We were shocked at yields are down like 40 bushels. And I know it's early. It could get better as we go move a little north because of more rain. But just curious to see with the USDA report about stocks if also we're still going to look at 179.
Yeah, it makes the stocks report that we got this week coming in 250-some million bushels below trade expectations through a combination of the June revision, lower SEP 1 numbers, really puts the spotlight on next week's, because yield matters again. It really does. It's going to matter again. At the end of the last segment, we were talking coronavirus stimulus package. Pam, any thoughts on that from you?
Hey, the congressman from Iowa, Cindy Axne, said it best for me, and she said, let's sit at the table and get a damn deal because there's people out here that need relief.
Yeah, let's move forward. And if it takes Mnuchin pulling both sides to the middle on this thing, I think that's a good thing. Earlier this week had CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, Tom Vilsack, former USDA secretary, was on the show. We were talking about trade issues when it comes to dairy. Dwayne, from a dairyman's perspective, what are you looking at on trade?
Yeah, we were pleased with the USMCA that passed here a year ago or so, and that seems to have benefited the U.S. dairy industry. China hasn't come to the table completely. I mean, they're getting better and better, but year over year, they are down a little bit on some of their import products. But overall, I think we're heading in the right direction. And I'm pleased with them so far. So,
all right. And talk about the news story that you've got your eye on right now about baby formula and trade.
Yeah, it impacts us pretty substantially here at Dairy Gold. We export a lot of powders, and we were exporting a lot of powders to Mexico. And then we experienced Canada coming in and just, undercutting us and dropping milk powder into Mexico. And so that was kind of a personal connection to that news story. And I've been following it a little bit. And there was an interesting development. The Chinese dairy company Feihe teamed up with some the Canadian dairy processors to put in an infant formula plant in Ontario, I believe Kingston, Ontario, and a pretty substantial investment. And as it stands now, they cannot take that milk powder back home again. And so it's going to cause a rift now between the Canadians and the Chinese, that there was this infrastructure investment, and the Chinese are not able to capitalize that on it. And that's kind of a fallout from this. And that's quite frankly a market that our co-op is trying to tap into. So.
Interesting.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that America's caused problems between Canada and China.
are we throwing a little Huawei into the conversation here?
Oh yeah, come on. We got to talk about Huawei at some point. So Dwayne brings up a very, very interesting story. So the my understanding is the total output of that Chinese formula plant in Kingston is above the export threshold that was agreed to in the USMCA. So China very upset with what was agreed to in the USMCA. But I was looking at this, and one of the things that has changed is originally 50% or more of that milk product was actually going to be goat derived. And there's major supply issues in goat milk in Ontario, apparently. And so they've been talking about going more to cow's milk, which has now created this issue. So we'll have to see if Canada tries to get around it by, you know, creating a new class, and that creates issues in the USMCA. Oh, yeah. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do, but I have heard from Canadian dairy people that they made Canadian negotiators very aware of situations like this during the USMCA negotiations.
Wow. Wow. You know, and talking about trade and other issues, we were kind of joking around with Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork at the start of the show about her report on these monster-sized wild hogs in Canada. But look at what the wild hog population has done to Germany with the with the outbreak of African swine fever in that herd. They've kept it out of the commercial production, but it doesn't change the fact that China, Japan, South Korea have banned imports of pork from Germany now, Jim. This is it's a huge story. We've got plenty of wild hogs, a massive number of wild hogs in the United States. I'm not saying that, but we got to get this stuff under control because it creates trade issues, Jim.
Oh, absolutely. And even in Germany, it's going to be hard not to get it in there outside of the wild boar area, Chip, from the people I've talked with.
Oh, yeah. Keeping it out of the commercial herd is going to be really, really difficult to do. And it's going to what I'm doing is I'm researching, and I'll have a story on it at some point in the not-too-distant future, but I'm researching the biosecurity strategies, policies that they've got at these German at the commercial facilities in Germany to see if it works. We probably better pay attention to it. Real quick, Jim, jobs report. How bad was it or good was it?
I think it gave something for both bulls and bears, but we did add more jobs, but it was under the 1 million area. Yep. So, you know, both political parties will have something to say about it, Chip.
Okay, very good. Jim, get to work on the newsletter. We'll talk to you again real soon. Hey, next week, Jim, let's do a preview of the election, okay, bud?
We'll do it.
All right, sounds good. That's Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. Sean Haney, thank you so much.
Hey, cheers, everybody.
Yep, man. Thank you. Pam Johnson, stay safe out there for harvest, okay?
Will do.
All right, good stuff. And Dwayne Faber, thank you so much for chiming in on Dairy Week here during the free-for-all, Dwayne.
You bet. Take care, my friend.
You betcha. I hope to see you out in Vegas next year, since we're not going to do it this year, but hope to see you again soon. Hey, everybody, come back this afternoon for Garrett Toy from Ag Trader Talk. He's going to be our guest right here on AgriTalk. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.